on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hey, it's John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts, the series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychology Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcasts are to present information that's timely, topical, and controversial. Cosby, Stills, Nash & Young lead in, blah, blah, blah. You've already heard me play my greatest hits about these performers, so I'm going to just pass over that and get into a little bit of what the topic is today. We have had a kind of interesting, not quite contrarian backlash, but a backlash relative to the movements in social-emotional learning and diversity, equity, and inclusivity measures that have been taken in both elementary, secondary schools and post-secondary schools. The folks at the center of this are people that we can't just walk away from. They are people that have notable credentials and put some effort into the comments that they believe are necessary for us to hear. So in just a second, we're going to take a little look at these folks and give them some airtime here, so that we as psychologists who are going to confront this stuff have some way of at least appreciating their position. Initially, I want to make it real clear that what I am saying here is more to provide some perspectivism relative to these folks that are producing the material which is about to be unpacked here. That's kind of a bunch of nominalizations, doesn't say very much. But I want to make sure that I don't get tarred. I don't care. I was going to say the F word, tar me if you need to, but I want to bring this into our attention because it is relevant to us in our daily lives as psychologists. I've said this many times and probably in other podcasts. If I'm with a bunch of Christians, I'm an atheist. If I'm with a bunch of atheists, I'm a Christian. And those positions are less contrarian attention-seeking than to continue to try to bring perspective to points of view that are being articulated. So hopefully this podcast will also be seen in that light. I have already spoken of this, and I've spoken of some of this in relation to, I'm coughing again today, but in relation to some stuff relative to our college, College of Alberta Psychologists. And increasingly, I have whined about their technicalization of our discipline. That is, the code standards and guidelines become more yes and no. They become more polarized, this, not that, as opposed to promoting professional judgment. I'm big on, personal responsibility and professional judgment. And the college has said no. The membership likes it when we have very, very specific guidelines, not understanding that we are not electricians and our codes and standards will never approximate even those of medicine and dentistry, but I've done this on other podcasts. So I've taken this position where as we structure ourselves and try to raise our standards professionally, also that is a point where we really run out of the very intentions that we were starting with. which is to make our profession better. I wrote in Symposium in the ethics column on this idea of the coddling of the Alberta psychologist's mind. And this is borrowed from Jonathan Haidt. And Jonathan Haidt is a psychologist that we all know and we should respect. And he wrote one on the coddling of the American mind. And this is the first sort of shot fired over the bow of programs like SEL and DEIA. What he's trying to say is what I said in that article. Do we prepare the psychologist for the road, or the road for the psychologist? And his argument has been relative to children and young people, university, wherever, we have been trying to prepare the road for them as opposed to them for the road. Now, the two names that are associated with a lot of this contrarian stuff are Lukianoff and Haidt. And Lukianoff was on public PBS the other night in the news hour. And he was talking with the guy who's sort of the head of the DEI stuff versus his position relative to the problems with DEI. And of course, his argument is this is the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement in post-secondary education, that he argues essentially that these become overarching eyes trying to watch for and indoctrinate and out individuals that are not staying within party line. The DEI guy says, nah, there's lots of evidence to show that this stuff increases the ability of campuses to have greater freedom of speech and greater sense of respect for it, one for the other and for everybody else. Of course, Lukianoff says, are you kidding? It triages speech and prevents people from being able to speak as freely, and that there is a party line and on and on and on. And the same with the SEL, the social emotional learning in schools. It's been very critical. All right, so we start with these two guys because they're sort of a cornerstone of this. But the person that sponsored, the person that sponsored this reading list, this podcast today was a book review of Abigail Schreier's Bad Therapy book. It's a book that's just out, and it's Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. And her argument against us in many ways, against this idea of therapy and psychological interventions for children. So let me stop for a minute and grab my notes and take a look at this, the propositions in her book, and then a bit of a response to that. Okay. First off, her name, Schreier, maybe isn't as well known, but should be, because her first book that she wrote was Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. And in that book, she essentially argued that there is a social contagion factor that is taking place with prepubescent, emergent young adults, adolescents, that is affecting their views of themselves and the whole issue of sexual identity. I'm not going to talk about that particular book. We're really doing Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up, and looking at that one. Because she says, essentially, there is a similar social contagion issue, but it's us, it's adults that have this contagion. And it has to do with a soft parenting or a softer, and the word soft isn't a good one, is it? But this sort of way of going about parenting and attending to children in educational programs and then also in day-to-day life that she feels is doing damage to youth mental health. What she says essentially is by over-validating fear, anxiety, and emotional states, 1 in 6 children from the ages of 2 to 8 have been diagnosed with mental behavioral or developmental disorder. So there's an increasing diagnosis. I was listening to a really good podcast, The Huberman Project, the other day, and the topic was autism. And they said that Now the numbers are 1 in 36 children are being diagnosed as being on the spectrum. And their argument there is that there's a sensitization to the presence of certain behavioral expressions and symptoms. So more and more we're saying, oh, well, that's where that fits. I think originally it was like 1 in 76, and it's gone down progressively to 1 in 36, 38 maybe are the numbers that they threw out. So this is also part of her argument, but she's talking about something on the other side of the fence, not bona fide identification of behavioral patterns that would relate to a syndrome or a diagnostic category, but rather the idea of increasingly affording to youth designations and amplifying these designations. So taking, boy, I'm really rambling, I'm not really going, taking the normal sorts of expressions and moving them closer and closer to the edge of this social and emotional difficulties, definitions, or problems. And this is her argument in the book. All right, so jumping back into this, this idea of the coddling of kids and the coddling in the larger sense of society. It stands in her argument, stands in juxtaposition to the Della Hook. And I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she has written a book essentially on gentle parenting. And the gentle parenting, it models how you should speak to your child, and this idea of softening. And it's sweet because, so often parents say, get your shoes on, we got to go, right? And in the Della Hook book, she will say, we don't want to be late because we might, blah, blah, blah. Or you like to go to school, don't you? Don't you want to see your friends? This sort of, and this is the stuff that Shearer says is pervading our culture. That is, we're afraid, if Martians were studying us as anthropologists, they would say, yeah, it's really fun. North American parents, they believe they can put curses on their children. And they believe they can put the curses on the children by the way they talked to them and the way they act, and that this can harm the child, put a curse on them, and then the rest of their life, they will live out this curse. Here we go, me running to Mars. This tradition, Shearer's tradition, it falls in a long, long, long line of such patterning. Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt as well. What we see relative to child rearing is going back to the turn of the last century, the pendulum swinging back and forth, Hall coining the term adolescent and then prescribing parenting patterns that led to the like scouts for boys, Boy Scouts, where you have facsimiles of real things so that young men can have this simulacrum of what the previous century would have been. They'd have been in the factory working, but now you're going to be working at surviving in the wilderness, pitching a tent, chopping wood, all these kinds of things. So if you go through the 20th century, this pendulum swings back and forth. They started with a psychoanalytic approach, which is similar to gentle parenting, the idea that we can put curses on our children, and the tradition, at one time of mother blaming, and this idea that, there has to be a soft, inside-the-skin approach to the kids. Then comes Watson, and he says, no, it's an outside-the-skin thing, and he demonstrates through his behavioral emphasis. And the swing goes back and forth into the 50s and 60s, where for our discipline, for example, B.F. Skinner, looking at contingencies and behavioral emphasis on the training and the development, and his daughter allegedly being raised in the Skinner box, a device he developed that had to do with behavioral principles. And then sort of Carl Rogers and Rogerian reflected in the work of Dr. Spock, and now not Dr. Spock from Star Trek, but the baby book, Dr. Spock. And there was a baby book that came out in the 50s, and every parent carried it around because it said what you need to do with every situation and every emergency. And the story I like to tell is I was, you know, in college, so I'm a youngish guy, and I was visiting the family of the woman that became the mother of my children, and the neighbor, the boy, got a sliver in his foot, and the mom, what was her name? It doesn't matter. But she ran in the house and came running out with the book, with Spock's book on parenting, because she wanted to reference what you do when there's a skin knee, you know, a broken something, a cut or whatever. So that became, you know, that approach. So this pendulum swings back and forth. And so Shearer and you know, the other two guys I mentioned, they're heading off in that direction of, you know, a more feral approach to child rearing in general. But let's go to her book a little bit more. She does talk about the idea that this is not just therapy. She uses therapy as sort of a signifier. And she knows not that many kids are in therapy relative to the impact she's talking about, but the therapization that shows up in the schools and in parental approaches, right? And then of course wants us to I already used the word have a more feral approach, that is to let the children learn more from experience. And I've talked about this as being part of indigenous culture. I'm not speaking necessarily of just our indigenous culture here, but indigenous cultures everywhere, and cultures that are more fundamental. I was in Hungary in, oh my God, when would it have been? Prior to 1970, it was still when they were under the Soviet Union still existed under the authority. And we went to a Roma horse auction. They were bringing horses, and the Roma were auctioning and buying and trading horses. And this was not, you know, this was not gypsy tourism. This was a real Roma thing. And we were standing watching, and all of a sudden this child wanders over, four, maybe five, and has a strip of dried meat in their hand and a very, very sharp knife. Bicsko is the Hungarian word for these special knives that have a curved blade. And the child puts the meat in their mouth, takes the knife, and cuts. And this is a child of very, very tender years. And the mother of my children and I looked at each other and went, this is a whole different approach to child rearing. In other words, they are raised to develop an independence. And there may be some Roma children that have part of their noses missing, or maybe not. I don't really know. Another experience of this was in Mexico once traveling. And down the road comes a guy, and he's got a son with him that's maybe 8 or 9. And the son is carrying as much leña, firewood, on their back as, you know, they could possibly carry. So in other words, kids are expected to be resilient, to be out in the world and doing things, and to contribute in ways that are not symbolic, right? As I said earlier, Hall invented the term adolescence turn of the last century, and then talked about the symbolic sorts of activities that young men and later young women would participate in that would have been mandatory and necessary for the well-being of a family, and now they're being fabricated through these youth associations. Okay, and now again, we want to be we want to understand Shearer's position, and that is that she goes to an extreme, and then of course these people get seconded. The gentleman, Lukianoff and Haid and Shearer, they get seconded to the right. And yet the right, let's be fair about this, because the right is also very much into this parental authority. That is, instead of children being sent to school to decide what and how and with whom they will think, the parents, they're saying to them, no, you will now determine whether your child can go into a sex education. There's not an opt-out, there's an opt-in. So spontaneous conversation in the Alberta school, should this legislation pass, around issues related to gender or sexuality cannot take place. there has to be clearance. So there has to be parental authority for that, which would play very much into this same argument that returning all this parental authority to the conservative base would once again defeat the goals of children being allowed to develop in a more open and challenging sort of setting. All right, so let's take and we'll honor a little bit of her stuff, and we'll take a look at what some of that is that we'd all agree on. Okay, the basic premises that we would find common ground with her on are three. We know we ought not to react to normal childhood setbacks. In other words, the image of the woman running out with a book right away and wanting to overreact to the sliver that this kid got and want to make sure that they did it according to the catechism of gentle parenting, but in that case, Dr. Spock's advice, would be overreaction to normal childhood setbacks. So the idea is to create resilience in the children relative to what life is going to give us. Freud said neuroses is same damn thing over and over. He said normal life is one damn thing after another. So to prepare our children for those one damn thing after another. The second is restricting children from independence in the real world. Okay, so the idea that the sort of free range capacities of children to find through their own experiences. Again, let's use the example of children with expected demands and living with the expected demands in rural Mexico relative to supporting and helping their family. And then the Roma child who the parents just say, if you want to eat, go and eat, you know. So this idea of not helicopter parenting or that sort of satellite and overview stuff. And the third one, and this is an awkward one, is we give the kids far too much digital autonomy so that right now a lot of their psychosocial education has to do with the way media works with them. See right now media is kind of in the place that any new technology is. When cars came out, you didn't have a driver's license, you didn't have insurance, you just took off and away you went. And firearms is not a good one, but the idea that at one time in the Wild West, you didn't have to have any sort of any permits or registration. I guess some places it's still that way, but the idea that we slowly catch up to how things are going to be run. For example, television. And being able to restrict what's available on a large scale through television. And so what we're going to see with media is the same thing. There'll be licensing sorts of ventures where we will have to registration and a license, so to speak, to be able to access certain kinds of media. And then media will be, in the same way that Canada has some regulations around hate speech, will be regulated in a way so that we cannot freely use media any way that we want. But anyway, so this idea. So these are three things that we all understand and we know that can be problematic for kids. However, what happens, and in so much of her stuff and in the book, I mean, I'm reading reviews of the book, so I'm reading outtakes and things there, It contributes really strongly to the culture wars. And again, that's the danger of these folks trying to be more, I don't think she's trying to be centrist, but I think people want to be more centrist or the Amundsen approach. Yeah, if you're this, I'll be that. If you're that, I'll be this. Approach to increasing dialogue and interaction and not letting us get away just, by making things too simple, right? This idea of quickly embracing some creed or standard that then we don't have to continue to struggle or think. This is her book, and you need to be prepared for it. And you want to say, yeah, she raises some of the cautions that we want to bring to this, but at the same time, understanding that she would literally, we say throw the baby out with the bathwater. She would literally send the baby naked into the world as opposed to, perhaps as parents would say, yeah, we ought to at least put some shoes on their feet so they don't walk through hot coals too often. All right, so there we are. That's the podcast for today, and I'll try to find a song to get us out.
it's fine building jumbo planes or taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?